Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm Louisa Kasdan, host of Let's Talk About Food. I recently hosted an exciting live podcast event in Boston and interviewed incredible women entrepreneurs who have received small business coaching from the Samuel Adams Brewing the American Dream program.
When I was applying to law school and I got in, I said, you know what? I'm still young. Let me pivot and go into the food industry and really follow my passion.
I was kind of scared. It was a new thing to me. It was like, hey, I don't want me in the newspaper. I just want to be in my room in my house. So that was when I'm like, okay, now that I'm in the local newspaper, I better not disappoint the people that, you know, that have this belief in me.
And on the days that you're tired or you feel defeated, just keep going. And 10 people might tell you no, but that doesn't mean that's your end result. You just have to keep going.
Hear their stories on Let's Talk About Food, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks again to Samuel Adams Brewing the American Dream for supporting this episode.
Help the people who help Oaxaca. Since 2009, Seconda has been supporting Oaxaca's underserved communities. Almost 5,000 people annually see their lives improved by this Mexican NGO. They've built and stocked 6 green libraries and 4 rain harvest hygiene stations, benefiting around 800 children and youth. And they've provided training and business coaching for over 120 female entrepreneurs. And much of that work has been done with the recycler communities that have grown around the garbage dump sites in Zaachila. All of that really is just the tip of an ever-growing iceberg. They've also supported legislation and implemented localized trainings designed to prevent sexual violence against girls and youth, eliminate child labor, forced labor, and violations of labor rights in Mexico's sugarcane and coffee sectors, and address the causes of gender inequality. And their small staff has done all of this without ever having offices of their own. For the past 13 years, Seconda has been hosted within the premises of a local bakery, a very kind gift from a very good corporation. But Seconda now needs their own home. They've acquired a plot of land and found an architectural firm, Sans Pont Arquitectura, willing to donate their time to develop plans. Now we need to raise the money to make those plans a reality. The cost of these new offices is around $100,000 US. They've received a matching grant from 818 Tequila that will cover half of that if we can raise the other $50,000. Seconda has done so much to help so many. We're asking you now to help Seconda. Help them build offices that will enable them to continue their existing work and to expand their programs that make Mexico more just and equitable. Make your fully tax-deductible contributions for Seconda at buildoaxaca.com. That's buildoaxaca.com. And thanks. I'm Lou Bank.
I am Cha Pariwan.
And this here is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Green Gex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. So Chava, you and I, we were just talking.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, be quiet, Jacob. We were just talking about the rules and the regulations and what's right and what's not right and blah, blah, blah. And it brought to mind something that's been in the back of my head for a long time.
It's not her.
It's definitely not hair. It might be moss. So here's the thing. What is, according to the gnome, right? Uh-huh. Gnome 70, which defines what is mezcal.
Yes.
What is the acceptable range of alcohol by volume? What percentage alcohol?
36 to 55.
35, I was right. 35 to 55%.
All right.
Okay, now. What in the USA qualifies as actual mezcal?
Starting at 40 ABV.
40 ABV.
Correct.
Right. So this is, I'm going to say unlike most episodes, but in fact, it's like most episodes. This is what we're going to call a speculative episode of Agave Road Trip.
No, I hate this one.
My question to you, I know you hate it. So the Mexico gets to define what is and is not mezcal.
In their own territory.
Mexico, within Mexico, they say anything 35% to 55% alcohol by volume qualifies as mezcal. And they then have a treaty with the USA where the USA says, okay, you guys, you recognize that bourbon can only come from us and we'll tell you what is and is not bourbon. And we'll recognize that you can define what is and is not mezcal. And we'll recognize that and accept that. Mm-hmm. And at some point, something flipped so that in the USA, Mexico was like, well, if it's going to go to the USA, it's got to be at least 40% alcohol by volume. Why?
Because it... maybe the first one would be because that will justify the trip. You have to have at least sort of a more expensive product, and therefore that will justify sending it over like abroad.
Sending it abroad. Well,
so I think they were trying to protect themselves in the sense that, you know, at least in Mexico, a lot of that really low ABV, like the 35 low, like ABV stuff.
Yeah.
Will be, will be even considered among us stuff that is not of the highest quality. So I think like just as.
Didn't we just record?
I know. I'm like talking.
What do you know?
I know that
contradict yourself now or I'm going to contradict you.
Wait, I'm trying to imagine how these kids were thinking. And I think that they were like, okay, if at least a company is putting 40 ABB in the drink, it has to be better than just 35. I don't know.
I don't know either. And you know, the same thing is true of tequila, 35 to 55 in Mexico, but 40% to 55% in the USA. I wonder if it's not actually just somebody's error.
Bear with me here.
Think about it. You're talking about a bunch of bureaucrats pushing paper around. And I think somebody in there was like, well, you know, I'm from Oaxaca. We never drink anything lower than 40%. It must be 40%. They didn't even look at the gnome. They just put 40%. That's my theory.
I don't know. No, Lou. I think that's a terrible theory. I need you to feed me another
one. Okay, so here's another theory.
Yeah, please.
Here's another theory. Is that in the USA, there are different stages, and I'm not sure what the breaking point is, so this could be complete and utter bullshit.
I have a one, but okay, go.
Different, like, taxation rates change at different ABV levels. And so maybe it was the U.S. saying, okay, well, we'll recognize it, but it's all got to be expensive stuff for our taxation because it's the TTB, it's the Tax and Trade Bureau.
Oh, so they thought, like, if we allow 35, 25 tequila, we're not going to be able to
It can't be 25, but 35. No, but 35, like, can we just round it up to 40? Because then it's all going to qualify with the same thing. Like, maybe it's that?
That is so fascinating. I mean, that's just, like, making my wheels turn in many, like, What will be... Okay, so let me think the other thing. Which is the lowest ABV that you can find in bourbon in the US of A?
I don't know. I'm going to look that up. But yeah, keep but, going but, with your but, theory while I'm looking
but,
it up.
But maybe it's more of a gringo thing that you got like your own internal ways of, you know, define.
Oh, Java, I think you might have hit something.
What?
Apparently, it has to be 40% ABV or higher.
Okay, then there you go.
There you go. You just want to stop right there. But I wonder if that isn't it. Like, if you think about it, because really, I do believe that it was that negotiation that was, okay, you recognize bourbon, we'll recognize mezcal, and bourbon always has to be 40%. So then somebody in Mexico was like, yeah, we're the same with our mezcal and our tequila. It also has to be 40%. Don't look at our paperwork. Maybe
it
was
that?
Like
it was also considered to be, I mean, which is super silly because... ultimately, the raw material to make tequila and mezcal is way more expensive than the material that you need to use, that you use to make bourbon. But maybe they were like, maybe it's unloyal competition. If you can bring your alcohol at lower ABV, and they're like, alcohol is money, guys. So you have to be competing in the same area.
Was that the, which side
said
that?
The bourbon guys. The bourbon guys.
The bourbon guys. And maybe, on the other hand, it was the Mexico guy saying, oh, wait, we don't want to bring in a 35% to compete against your 40%
bourbon. Oh, yeah.
So maybe it was the other way.
So they wanted to make shots. And they're like,
they were fighting over who's going to, going to have the bigger shots.
Maybe. The other thing that that's making my wheel spinning right now is, and this is so off of this, but why do you think that also internally the conversation, because, and this is another thing that happened in our little trip to Guanajuato, San Luis Potosí, and you've been finding a lot of evidence in old books about this, that there was stuff that was going down to the 30s to the 20s in ABB.
Yep.
But this was...
single distillation, double distillation.
But these were the low wines that were usually reserved for people with not a lot of money.
You lost me a bit on that. When you're saying that they were usually reserved for that, are you saying that you have evidence of that, or that you think?
No. You sent me a little bit of a book that said that.
Oh, and it literally said that in the book.
It must
have said it in Spanish.
Yes, and it said that low wines were reserved for the workers of the haciendas, and basically it was considered to be a lower quality wine and just given to the workers in the haciendas when it was that low ABB. So maybe
it's a classist thing.
Yeah, I think we've been carrying a lot of. I mean. The one story we always tell about mezcal is how it carries a classic stigma on top of it.
And how
it was able to overcome it. But maybe it hasn't been able to overcome it after all.
Maybe not. You know, the other thing, because we're only at 8 minutes, the other thing that I'm thinking about now as you're talking about all these books I've been pulling up is how often I'm finding references to things that no longer exist or rarely exist. Let me put it that way.
Extremely often.
Yeah, like one of the things that keeps popping up as I'm looking at these articles and books from the 1800s, right? Mm-hmm. The early 1800s, is how often you had these tequilas specifically that are basically curados with almonds. Or tequilas that are curados with oranges.
Or all sorts of things.
Yeah. And I was over at Binney's the other day here in Chicago and looking in the tequila section to grab some bottles from our friends at El Bandido Yankee. I was in there looking for the bottles. And as I was streaming through the aisle, I found a bottle of the almond stuff that's brought in commercially.
What?
I found one commercial bottle of, I want to say it was called Almendrado, but I know that's not right.
So like amaretto with mixed tequila.
Yeah, basically, and it says even on the bottle, made with tequila. It's tequila amaretto. How would you say that in Spanish?
Amaretto.
But it was like Almendrado or it was definitely.
Almendrado, yeah, Almendrado.
Almendrado, yeah. But I haven't seen any of the orange stuff, but it's interesting that. Clearly, before they were trying to commercialize it
worldwide, because these are, you know, early 1800s stories, they were doing this experimentation that now, when you were, if you were trying to release it on the market, people would say, well, that's not traditional.
Well, and you know, I told you that yesterday. I'm staying at your house right now, and you have a bunch of magazines laying around. Yeah. So you go to bed at 9, and I have...
And you read.
I start reading around. So I pull out this this magazine that's dedicated to vinegar. What's the name of the magazine? F Magazine?
I think it's just F Magazine.
Correct.
Yeah.
So fascinating stuff. And I went through a whole article about the denomination of origin in vinegar and a production site in Italy.
Right, a specific kind of vinegar. Vinegar correct. Is not a DO. But
Yeah. A specific kind of vinegar in Italy. And they were describing the process of how all the research that had to be made in order to justify their DO and how they went into a lot of tax papers. They went into a lot of like, okay, this is how we used to do it. This was how it was first consumed. There was even a story about how Napoleon stole some vinegar from some old castle in Italy. So they did all this historical research in order to say, these are the guidelines that we think should regulate this specific expression. And when you go into the Mexican NOM, the historical research behind it, it's not necessarily there.
And I can't think of any, you know, this is just off the top of my head, but I can't think of anything that actually refers to anything historical.
Correct. In any part of the NOM, it does say, like, pechuga is acknowledged because it was first referenced.
Actually, it's not pechuga.
Well.
Because that's not in the NOM. But keep going.
Yeah. Well, or avocado.
There
it's,
you go.
it's accepted because it was first found in this document, and this was the way the traditional first recipe that was found followed these guidelines or these ways of going about it. And even if we know that this might be not historical, we see like there's no documentation about this. Blah 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 blah. There's no bibliography.
Oh, that is so interesting. It makes me want to take about a month to hang with you and just rewrite the NOM as it would look if you did that. Like in terms of how it would change the content and what the references would be.
I think, you know, like I would prefer not just to do it with you. I will.
You want to do it with some people who are educated.
Take this as an offense, but I would love, I mean, if we could find a way on sitting down with one person of each state.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, think about like historian, a producer, a journalist, down and go state by state. Let's not do one DO for the whole mezcal
right. In
one shot.
Right, right, right.
Let's first try to be tackling state by state and be like, how will the DO look for Durango?
God, you know, that sounds awesome. But I also know that like you're so far behind even on your expense reports that we're never going to get that done.
I know, but I know we are not going to. But I think if we were to give this task to someone in different states, maybe that can be done.
Okay, if you're interested, sign up. Send us a message through agaveroadtrip.com, and you can rewrite the NOM.
And what we're gonna do? How we're gonna publish it?
We're gonna publish it on our website, and we're gonna declare martial law.
That's not enough.
It's not enough. We'll give it to Alberto. He'll figure out something to do with it.
Okay, cool. I'm good with that. Okay. So I guess that's the end of the episode.
I guess that is it. Hasta pronto, Java.
Nos vemos.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Peribán. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pitbulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Out.